Great Britain and Japan, two nations once defined by order and cultural continuity, are now unraveling under the same globalist forces of mass demographic change.
It's emergency.
Yeah, we've just been attacked by someone racially.
In Britain, years of anti-racism indoctrination have crippled policing, producing a two-tier justice system.
Your officers assisted in that man's death.
That protects minority feelings over public safety.
In fact, Henry told officers that he could not breathe 9 times. He told them he had been stabbed 4 times. The response from one officer was, "I don't think you have, mate."
He was actually treated in a way that meant an accusation of a racial slur was treated more seriously than an act of murder. What does he say? "I can't breathe." Familiar words? Remember career criminal George Floyd, who died in appalling circumstances in Midwest America a few years ago. Remember the reaction to that and the way the police behaved. Within a few days, Keir Starmer was taking the knee. Black Lives Matter exploded all over the country. Churchill's statue was defaced. The cenotaph was vandalised. And yet, what has the public reaction been from our leaders and politicians? And indeed, to be frank, much of the media to this. Silence. Absolute silence. Proof, if ever there was any, that we're living in a two-tier culture in this country where the rights and privileges of white people matter less than those of ethnic minorities.
When we have police cars with pride flags on it, which is a politicised movement, we know that the police, who are supposed to be impartial, are often anything but. They are driven by an ideology, a Marxist, cultural Marxist ideology, that is not right, that is not good, and it's against you, and we're seeing two-tier policing, we're seeing two-tier justice, two-tier politics, and the people of Britain have had enough of it.
The outrage has exploded as Nigel Farage, Parliament, and even John Cleese expose how religious exemptions shield violence while native citizens face the consequences.
But no matter the pain we feel, there is no justification for more violence and disorder.
Yeah.
The attacks directed towards police officers in Southampton last night were disgraceful and completely unacceptable.
Yeah.
This is a time for serious work, not rage.
Yeah.
And let me be clear, we will ensure anyone found engaging in disorder meets the full force of the law, as we have done before.
Under the Criminal Justice Act 1988 and Offensive Weapons Act 2019, carrying a bladed weapon in public carries up to 4 years in prison for ordinary Brits, yet Sikhs receive a statutory religious defense for the kirpan, allowing public carry even as prosecutors admitted Digwa chose a larger 21-centimeter blade beyond his compliant neck kirpan. France, Denmark, Sweden, Italy, and the UAE have banned public kirpan carry outright with Sikh compliance. But UK authorities cling to the exemption, effectively arming one group while disarming the native people with no way to defend themselves. Further east, Japan, long a holdout against this chaos through post-war restrictions and the 1952 Immigration Control Act, now faces its own opening salvo. 10 ancient temples and shrines, including one from 807 AD and a World Heritage Site, have been torched in the first 5 months of 2026 alone, despite automation over cheap labor and strong public opposition to large-scale immigration. Japan's quiet visa expansions and cultural arson signal the same globalist pressure hell-bent on eroding identity. Britain surrendered to the script and got two-tier chaos. Japan resisted and still watches its soul set ablaze. Proof that dilution of a people's history, safety, and cohesion is not progress. It's engineered collapse. John Bowne reporting for the Alex Jones Network at alexjoneslive.com.
This is an emergency.
emergency transmission from FEMA Region 6 in occupied North America.
There is a war. It's happening now. It will decide the fate of humanity. The time has come to choose sides. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Share the links now at alexjoneslive.com.
Alex Jones is back. The info war continues at alexjoneslive.com. And you can follow us on X at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble at The Alex Jones Show Live. Plus, you can download the app, alexjonesapp.com. So check it out now and let the deep state globalists know we will never be silenced.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, alexjoneslive.com, the Alex Jones Network. Right now, there is an absolutely massive discount on every single product at thealexjonesstore.com. Go to thealexjonesstore.com today. From now until Friday at midnight, you're getting 40 to 50% off site-wide. Half off every product, pretty much. 40 to 50% off site-wide sale. No discount code needed. That ends Friday at midnight. Plus, this is your last week. In fact, it's your final 2 days to enter to win both the custom H1 Hummer and the 2026 Dodge Charger, plus $20,000 in cash. For every $1 you spend, you get 100 times the entries to win both. And this is the week where people most often win the car. And we've given a lot of these cars away. We got to give these to somebody. Somebody's got to win these cars. Might as well be you, right? All you got to do is go to thealexjonesstore.com to be entered to win. Spend a dollar, get 100 times entries to win. Plus, if you spend $99, you get free shipping. Spend $125, you get free CMOS gummies. Spend $175, you get free Shilajit gummies, plus the CMOS, plus the free shipping. Plus, it's all 40 to 50% off site-wide until midnight tomorrow. But don't wait. Go now to thealexjonesstore.com. Support us. Keep us on the air and get the best products in the world at half off today and tomorrow only at thealexjonesstore.com. The Carmelo Anthony trial is occurring here in Texas, and we're getting a lot of updates. Apparently, the jury has now seen the surveillance footage, and I'll go to a description of that in just a second. Before we do, I want to go to clip 25 here. This is Savannah Hernandez, who's there at the trial, talking about jury selection and some manipulation, perhaps, going on from the defense. Let's watch.
Okay, also, I just noticed this headline, baby-faced Carmelo Anthony heads to court to stand trial for murder. Now, one thing that I forgot to report to you guys yesterday, because I did get to go inside the courthouse and I was watching the live stream of the jury selection, is that Carmelo Anthony has since shaved his head, so he even looks younger than he does in this photo. On top of that, let's not forget that his lawyer is going to be referring to him for the duration of this trial as Mello, a nickname that his lawyer states his friends and family know him by. So not only has Carmelo drastically changed his appearance with that shaved head, again, making him look much younger, but his lawyer also going to be referring to him as Mello for the duration of this trial. By the way, you have the Carmelo supporters, which I'm sure you can hear behind me. They were just chanting that they love their black youth and they deserve protection too. I am live on the ground for opening arguments of the Carmelo Anthony trial.
So those opening arguments happened today, and some evidence was presented, including the video of the event at the track meet. We have a report from somebody that was in the courtroom and saw the video themselves. And it sounds like it's not quite the clear-cut, you know, solution-providing video that it may otherwise be. He stabbed, she stabbed. Yeah, pretty much. Let's go to clip 27 now.
Country, but those opening statements were definitely powerful on either side.
Notes, Cody. We're so fortunate that you've been able to share with us what is happening inside of that courtroom. Tell us more about the surveillance video, because your notes on this were very interesting. What were you able to see? And then I also understand there was a reaction from the victim's family when that was being played.
Yeah, Julia, so that's in the opening statement, they were referencing surveillance video. And, you know, of course, everyone wanted to see video. We haven't seen anything. There's been a gag order on this case since the very beginning last year. So they start playing this video. There are five different angles of the video getting walked through from testimony by the forensic video analyst. And they were very wide-angle videos, Julia. And the witness had to talk about how he had to use his software to zoom in and try to make the video as clear as possible. And even then, Julia, I won't lie, it still looked very fuzzy and hazy. It definitely sets the scene. You can see what's going on, but even the prosecution distinctly said that you won't be able to uniquely identify anyone, but they referred to Carmelo on the video as the person of interest, and they referred to Austin Metcalf as the victim. Of course, as the forensic analyst has digested this video and dissected it and pointed out everything that we need to know, going through shoes and the type of clothing they were wearing. So we identified who each person was in the video, even though they kind of just looked like humanoid blobs. But you see, one thing that stood out to me, Julia, is that, you know, I'm very familiar with track meets. I was under the impression that, you know, when you go to a championship track meet, you have multiple tents on the same side of the bleachers. But in this video, because it's early in the morning, just before 10 a.m. when all this happened, the high school where the tent where the high school where all this went down, Memorial High School, it was just an isolated tent in the bleachers by itself. There were no surrounding, you know, schools or anything in the general area. You saw some schools walking in, but I guess, you know, the meet was just starting. But anyway, they identify Carmelo walking up the bleachers, kind of walking towards the tent. He kind of goes towards someone, and you see him standing there for a couple of minutes. Then you see Austin Metcalf, his twin brother, and his friends walking up and getting under the tent. And then once everything's happening under the tent, it just kind of looks like a blob of people. You can't really make out anything that's really going on for 5 to 6 minutes. And then you see a quick to and from. You know, and they were implying that was like the push, the initial contact. You can't really see anything happening. Before then, you see people walking by. They're not really, you know, turning heads as if something's loud and, you know, something's catching their attention. But all of a sudden, you see that to and from, and then you see Carmelo, or who they identify as person of interest, who we're assuming to be Carmelo Anthony. He runs out from under the tent, and then he's running down the bleachers, sprinting a ways away from the tent and out of the stadium, onto the track and everything, towards one of his coaches. And eventually after that, we see another angle of the video where Carmelo's been taken into custody by police. But the reaction, Julia, it wasn't a visceral reaction. You know, when you saw the to and from, of course, that's the stabbing action, if you will. All I saw, I'm sitting two rows behind Austin Metcalf's father, and his head was just kind of in his hands, kind of like this. Wasn't necessarily crying, but, you know, just implying that he doesn't really want to see, even though you can't see the stabbing, but he knows in his mind this is the moment that his son lost his life. So he was just there, you know, obviously overwhelmed by everything. I'm sitting right behind the Metcalf family. Carmelo Anthony's family is on the opposite side of the courtroom. But again, the video, not as impactful as I thought, but it definitely is a scene setter to help us understand clearer as to what's going on, since we haven't seen anything so far in this case.
So again, we've got some more reports about what is occurring inside the courtroom. There's no cameras in there, but people are reporting, such as Marianne Martinez at Marianne Reports on X. She says, new state witness Vincent Cooper, a coach at Frisco ISD, is now testifying that he was assigned to manage Carmelo Anthony after the stabbing and stop him from leaving the football stadium. Later, Cooper was asked to calm down a teammate of Austin Metcalf, who was angry about Austin stabbing. Austin's teammate, who is black, wanted to attack Anthony. He stabbed my brother, the Black Memorial teammate said of Austin Metcalf. The teammate explained that he was on the football team with Austin and considered him family. Coach Rob Starr, the head track coach at Memorial High School, where Austin Metcalf went to school, he is testifying about track culture and how the tent was a big deal. Each school has a tent with their name, logo on it, and kids who don't belong to that school do not go to the tents of other schools. Quote, as far as the tent specifically, basically the tent marks your spot, Starr said. What the tent represents is kind of like your bench. Think of it like a football or basketball bench. The tent is the safe area for your team. Starr added that the student athletes kept their belongings and valuables under the tent, and sometimes a coach is even assigned to stay at the tent to keep an eye on the belongings of the kids. It's a big deal to keep people out from underneath your tent, Starr said. Starr explained he was going to be busy running the track event on the day of the stabbing and texted Austin Metcalf in the morning to help him step up and be a leader by helping to run the event. Starr recounting he was across the field at the concession stand when he saw commotion under the team tent and knew something had happened. He ran back across the field. What I do see is Austin on the ground and his face is purple and he has a big hole in his chest, Starr explained, crying as he recalled the stabbing in April 2025. Starr says Hunter pointed at Carmelo Anthony and asked Starr to do something. Starr approached Anthony, who was walking very calmly with his coaches, until Starr asked him what happened. Starr raced back to Austin's side, where several coaches were praying over him. Twin brother Hunter was nearby and was hysterical. I jumped the gate and I went to Hunter, and he was hysterical. I just knelt down and prayed with him. Several members of the public are crying as court sees text Starr sent to Austin one day after he died. Ooh, brutal. Jurors are about to see the only known recording video of the Carmelo Anthony Austin Metcalf stabbing. Daily Mail has seen the video, which is recorded by a fixed camera at David Kirkconnell Stadium in Frisco, Texas, in April 2025, the day of the deadly meet. And that's what we know so far. There's been some controversy about the fact that there's no black members of the jury, which apparently, when questioning the jury members, many jurors, potential jurors, said things like, I couldn't put another brother in jail, or he's just a kid, I'd have a hard time putting him in jail. So, frankly, in the pursuit of justice, it's probably a good thing. However, I wouldn't be surprised if that turned out to be a method by which a retrial could be demanded, even though I'm sure the process that they went through was legitimate. I'm sure you could find some leftist judge who thinks that, having a non-black jury would somehow prejudice them against Carmelo. I mean, it's ridiculous, but that is certainly the case. And again, I say that because I've seen the numbers. We've presented them here as well. A white defendant is something like 50% more likely to be convicted by a black jury, and the numbers reversed the other way around. Basically, it's proven out with the numbers that you are much, much less likely to get a fair and accurate result if the jury is black. And, you come up with whatever reasons you want to apply. But I think it's pretty clear when, potential jurors are asked if they would throw somebody in jail and they say, I won't do it because I don't want to put another brother in prison, right? Literally just saying, I want to let the black person go. It's just like, okay, then you can't be a juror. Sorry, that's just not how this works. You're not capable of managing the responsibility, so you're not allowed on the jury. That's just how it goes. Another big event that is coming up, and it doesn't seem to be going well. I watched a bunch of videos about this yesterday. It's the UFC event in Washington, D.C. They're building this outdoor arena outside of the White House, and the whole thing seems like it is a giant disaster already, and I don't know how well it's going to go. Basically, everybody that pays attention to the UFC and comments on it and, is involved in it, you basically have like Dana White, who is saying that it's going to be great, but everybody else is like, what is this? I don't think this is actually such a great idea. For one thing, there's a particularly dystopian setup where they're going to have like 500 seats that are all going to be basically Trump and his friends, and whatever seats are left, they're selling for $1.5 million a piece. Okay, so it's literally going to be nothing but billionaires in the actual front row seats and the actual seats around the, octagon, the ring. Meanwhile, there's going to be 85,000 people at the ellipse on the other side of the White House, I guess, watching on a big screen. So you're going to have a very Hunger Games-esque setup with the billionaires and the oligarchs watching the gladiatorial combat in the seats, while separated from them by a pretty good distance is going to be the hoi polloi and the crowd that gets to watch it on TV. The problem is they're doing this in Washington, D.C. in the middle of summer. So that's not going to go well. The fighters, people like Joe Rogan commented on it quite a bit, saying basically you shouldn't do anything like this in an uncontrolled environment. You've got fighters who are like training in saunas to try to acclimate themselves to the heat and the humidity that they'll be dealing with. But on top of that, you've got to light this thing for television, which means you're going to have incredibly bright lights over the whole thing, which is going to attract bugs. And there are going to be swarms of bugs messing up the entire thing. It's not, doesn't seem like the greatest, like the most well thought out idea. And then if you hear the actual like timeline of how this came about, basically like Dana White and Trump were kind of in negotiations about it. They kind of talked about it and were floating the idea. And then Donald Trump just came out and announced it. You can actually find interviews of Dana White being like, yeah, you just came out and announced it. Like we were not ready for that. And he made all these big claims about what it was going to be. It's basically scaled way back. None of the fighters are happy about, you know, who the fighters are that were chosen. The champion of the UFC has just been disinvited because he's anti-Israel. So that's an interesting development. I'll show you some videos about that here in a second. Sean Strickland is the, as far as I know, I don't really follow the UFC, but as far as I know, he is the UFC champion right now. And he has just been disinvited and is making videos about it and maybe holding a protest during the actual event, which would be very funny to see. I just have the feeling this is kind of going to be a disaster one way or another. Best possible outcome, it's a silly Trump rally that doesn't really matter. And it's just one aspect of the wider disappointment, not just in Donald Trump's administration overall, but in particular, his handling of the 250th anniversary of America. You know, originally his promise was basically a world's fair, right? A giant months-long celebration of America, you know, unveiling new technologies and celebrating our history and, you know, all this great stuff. And it slowly sort of wind down and winnowed down to the point where just a few days ago, Trump put out a statement saying, you know, basically nobody wants to perform at our event, so it's just going to be a Trump rally. The biggest, you know, the biggest crowd getter in the world, me, I'm going to be the star. And, you know, a lot of people had the same reaction, which was like, well, that sucks. Yeah, that just sucks. We went from like this promise of like a world's fair and entertainers and a months long event and a real celebration, inspiring patriotism and ideally celebrating success of the first 2 years of the second Trump administration. And now it's going to be just another Trump rally. Really? Like we haven't seen enough of those. Like that's what we're all looking for. That's what we're going to do to celebrate a quarter millennia of America's existence, is we're going to listen to Donald Trump brag about how much he's helped Israel. Okay, great. It really is pathetic and it really is shocking how it's all Israel. I get, you know, I get comments every day. It's like, oh, you're obsessed with Israel. What am I supposed to say? What am I supposed to do? They just kicked Sean Strickland off the UFC card. He's not even allowed to go. He wasn't going to compete. He just had a ticket. And they're not allowing him to go because he's not sufficiently pro-Israel. We should be celebrating the success of Donald Trump, because he should have done mass deportations. He should have not gotten us to war against Iran. We should be getting what we want. Instead, we get absolutely nothing. They get absolutely everything. And we don't even get a birthday. We don't even get a birthday celebration. Israel has stolen our birthday, folks. They're basically the Grinch. It's literally constant. It's literally everywhere. I mean, let's go to the video. Let's watch this video where they compile a couple of the UFC fighters, including Sean Strickland. Clip 24 here. UFC kicks Sean Strickland out of the White House event. Let's watch.
I am at a loss of words, but not because of what Donald Trump has been doing lately. The current UFC champion of the world, the current middleweight champion, Sean Strickland, got a phone call from someone up in the echelons of the UFC saying he cannot go to the next event that Trump is putting on in Washington at the White House. The current UFC champion, Sean Strickland. Why? Because of his criticisms of a small little group of people that we're not supposed to be talking about, named Israel. Here's Sean sarcastically telling the story of what happened.
Well, you guys, I'm not surprised, but I got the call. I got the call. The UFC higher-ups called me, you know, the big names. And they said, Sean, I got to apologize, but you're not Israeli enough to go to UFC 250 Israel edition. the White House in Elyria. And I'm not really surprised, you know. I'm not really surprised. So, you know, I think moving forward, I would like to just apologize to Israel. I'd like to say I'm sorry, you know. I'd like to apologize to Trump. And I just want to prove that I'm Israeli enough for you guys. Like, for instance, you know, whenever the list, like, disappeared and Trump goes out there and says to everybody that that he can't really go into it because people that by association will get prosecuted and, like, their names will be tarnished, I want to apologize because, you know, I don't want them to be prosecuted. Or, you know, when Trump goes and bombs the fuck out of our Americans, $5,000 to $15,000 to go fight Israel's war, I want to apologize. Sorry, I've been a critic of that, you know. My allegiance was apparently in the wrong place, and I just want to apologize. Or when Trump goes out there and says, hey, Trump, your approval ratings are the lowest it's ever been across all demographics. And Trump says, well, you know what? I have a 99% approval rate in Israel. I want to apologize, and I want to repent, and I want to repent, you know? Apparently, I'm not American enough to go to Freedom 250, but I still got my ticket, so maybe we'll just go. I'll bring the belt, and we'll just stand outside the gate, and we'll just let them know what we really think about Trump and Israel, you know?
It's a good thing he has friends like Jake Shields and Bryce Mitchell, who are also awake and speaking out with the influence that they have.
Did you see that Sean Strickland got banned from the White House for talking about Israel?
I'm not surprised at all. Freedom of speech is what really makes this country great. And when you can't criticize a foreign nation, come on, man. We ought to be able to criticize our own nation, let alone a foreign nation. In fact, that's the only nation you're not allowed to criticize. Something's going to change because evil empires don't last forever. There's always a rebellion.
What are your thoughts on the UFC White House just in general? Like,
I do want to be on the card.
You do want to be on the card.
I do. And this is what I got to say. First off, I ain't jealous at any of those fighters. I am so happy for those fighters. If they need me to fill in, if I'm healthy, hey, I'll do it. For the UFC, I think it's great. It's beyond great. It's literally the perfect scenario. But what I think personally is that our government is desecrating its role in society by entertaining sports. Our government is to protect and serve the people and really should be as minimal as possible. When you're doing all of this stuff, hosting sporting events, it's really outside of what the goal of the government was intended to be, because our tax dollars and resources are funding this operation. And like I said, I'm not criticizing the UFC. I love Dana, I love Hunter, I love Sean, Mick, I love all of them. But the government should never be hosting sporting events, because there's more room for corruption, and we already have a corrupted government. The government is supposed to protect us.
Good job, Trump. Make Israel great again, Trump. You two right here should be ashamed of yourselves, and we will never forget what you did.
This is Sean Strickland going to the White House. Going to the White House, it was promised to me 3,000 years ago. I mean, you have to laugh. But they're getting kind of brazen, aren't they? I mean, typically, you'd expect them not to sort of flex the power that they have right now. Like, Sean Strickland hasn't killed anybody. He hasn't done anything wrong. He's probably committed less crimes than a lot of the other people that are going to be at the stadium that day. But, you know, I guess they feel that they can come out and show their power. How's that going to work out, I wonder? We'll be right back.
Plugged for about 90 seconds at the end of the first hour. Didn't plug any last hour. And I'd raise that point. I'd say, aren't I good? I didn't plug. It's bad I didn't plug. But I didn't interrupt that guest. That's how we fund this operation. If I just plugged twice an hour, we've done the math, we'd have plenty of funds around this place. And I can then hire more crew, more stuff. But I don't do it, so we're almost in the red again. So be conscious about this and realize when you fund this operation, you are funding your insurance in the fight against tyranny. And the products really work, because we want to sell you something that is going to be great, that's good for you, that blows you away. So you go, man, that Alex Jones was right again. Not just about what he covers and says, but the products. Our T3 iodine is not instant gratification. It takes about 2 weeks on average for it to kick in. It is the missing link. Most people are iodine deficient. The iodine that's in the environment, most of it's bound, meaning it's not atomic. It's not pure on the periodic table. It is bound to a whole bunch of other stuff, and you don't absorb it properly. This is atomic iodine. It does everything. Now, again, you die without oxygen in 4 minutes. Everybody knows this. 4 minutes without oxygen, the average person's dead. Some people quicker. Without water, you die in about 4 days. Out in the desert today, most people die in about 45 days without food. Now, why is that? Because the food has the vitamins and minerals in it. And I know I'm talking to you like you're 5 years old. I know most of you get this. For others that don't, iodine, you can look it up, is one of the essential elements that without iodine, you die. Now, in the 1920s, they noticed about a 15-20 point IQ reduction, particularly in the Midwest, and massive spikes nationwide of child deformities, birth defects. And they did a bunch of big government studies and found that people that lived on coastal cities and that ate a lot of fish had higher IQs and basically almost no deformities. And they went, oh, it's the iodine. So they started putting a cheap form that's bound, but you still get some of it, but sodium chloride, I think someone, in the salts. When I was a kid, it still said Morton salts, iodine added. You know, the little girl with the umbrella, and it says when it rains, it pours. This is the super version of that. Just a few drops a day. It takes 2 weeks on average to kick in for the average person. And your skin, your stamina, your libido. I remember, like, gosh, time flies, like 18 years ago or something, I met Dr. Edward Grip, really smart guy, total visionary. And he said, listen, you need to start taking atomic iodine. And he'd come out with the only one. And he said, you should sell this private label. And I said, okay. He said, you know, you got some of those sunspots on your face. And I was like 38 then or so. And I had bad skin, but I did have some sunspots, brown spots and stuff that weren't freckles. You know, I call them liver spots. And he said, all this other stuff will happen, your libido, everything. He goes, it's about 2 weeks for it to kick in. And right at about the 2 week mark of the average person, you'll kind of feel crappy for a day or two. It's not like you have a cold or the flu, but you feel kind of groggy and tired. That's when it shifts in the cells, the mitochondria. And then a lot of toxins will get pushed out. You might even break out or something. But he said, after that, you'll feel incredible. 2 weeks later, I go, man, I feel like crap today. I have no energy. Lasts about a day. And then when I woke up the next day after feeling sick the day before, it was like I'd been carrying, you know, one of my kids on my shoulders. I'd carry them until they were like 5 or 6. Sometimes it'd be exhausting, but you take them off your shoulders, it feels so good. That's what it felt like. You're insane if you don't get this, and it funds our operation. And I only sell stuff that works, but it's not instant gratification. 2 weeks. Now be careful with it. Talk to your physician before, because if you've got some different thyroid issues, it can cause problems. In most cases, it helps, but talk to your physicians. This isn't a game. And so a small percentage of people can do some weird stuff. So be careful. I'm not selling placebo here. I only sell stuff that kick you like a mule in a good way. Be conscious about this and realize when you fund this operation, you are funding your insurance in the fight against tyranny.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Back, folks. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I'm trying to figure out exactly where these videos are from, if these are the new ones. I've never seen some of these. So, Epoch Times just published never-before-seen 1989 Tiananmen Square massacre photos. The Epoch Times obtained thousands of photos depicting the 1989 pro-democracy student protest movement in China's Tiananmen Square. For decades, film rolls containing more than 2,000 photos documenting the 1989 Tiananmen Square democracy movement had been shut inside a metal box never known to the world. These photos, taken by a Chinese state media photographer and having survived the ensuing political purging campaigns after the massacre, eventually made their way to the United States, where they were entrusted to the Epoch Times. Now, the Epoch Times is making the photos public for the first time. Thousands of people are estimated to have died on June 4th at the hands of the Chinese communist regime 37 years ago. Wow. Soldier issues warning to pro-democracy protesters. People erect barricades to stop Chinese troops from advancing. So there's this whole collection of new photos unveiled on the anniversary of the massacre itself. Communist authorities, framing a peaceful student-led movement as a riot to disrupt social order, hunted down participants nationwide while instituting systematic ideological re-education to erase from history all but their versions of events. Kind of like January 6th. People gather near Zhongnanhai, the Chinese leadership compound, following the death of reform-minded leader Hu Yaobang in Beijing in 1989. People mourn the death of that reform leader. People, again, holding signs and staging this. So this is very fascinating. Epoch Times, of course, is a dissident Chinese news organization. The photos, now scanned and digitized, provide a glimpse of those fleeting weeks in spring 1989 where hope hung thick in the air and more freedoms seemed so close at hand until the gunfire proved otherwise. Bullet holes left after Chinese authorities opened fire to suppress the pro-democracy movement in Beijing 1989. Among those photos are students on hunger strike wearing white cloth bands around their foreheads. They're shown linking arms and staging million-strong street protests with academics, media professionals, and military officers joining in solidarity. When the troops came in, these students and civilian supporters resisted with barricades and their own bodies. There are the Chinese military officers with the protesters greeting them. For some time, they succeeded as military trucks ferried tens of thousands of soldiers to Beijing. Following a martial law order on May 20th, the students blocked them, sharing food and water while explaining their cause. The troops turned back. Some of the photos show military officers waving to protesters. In one, several smile as they accept Yutao, golden brown fried dough sticks that are a Beijing breakfast staple. In another, a uniformed officer makes the victory sign amid a sea of protesters, many of whom are doing the same. So that's interesting. They're like, sharing food and probably thinking that they're winning over the military, not knowing that the orders were coming for their extermination. Their upbeat spirit didn't last long. Late into the night on June 3rd, heavily armed troops marched in again. This time, they didn't hesitate to fire on civilians indiscriminately. The photographer documented bullet holes in a window and injured men on stretchers with blood soaking through their coverings. There were smashed heads, ruptured stomachs, spilling intestines around them, were mangled arms and legs, some still bleeding, the witness told, wrote on a public poster dated June 4th. Those were the bodies of six student protesters, the witness said, adding that everyone around except the soldiers were crying. The topic remains taboo in China. The Chinese authorities have harassed a number of people they deem to have been involved in providing the photos, including both Chinese nationals and citizens of the United States and Canada. Act quickly to eliminate the impact. Stop posting them, read one message from a Chinese police officer, which the Epoch Times obtained. Failing that, the officer warned, the targeted person would be on Interpol's red notice, arrested, and sent back to China. If that happened, the officer said, the entire family would suffer. Gee, what do you mean you don't like communism? Gee, what do you mean you're suspicious of socialism and communism? Don't you know how wonderful it claims to be? Totally mind-blowing the people in this country are communists. Totally insane that there are American people that think communism is in any way a positive at all. It's like the biggest failure of America that we haven't continued to drive home the evils of communism. And I think that's really what happened. I think 1989, the Soviet Union falls and we just sort of stopped, fighting back against communism. We just sort of went, okay, we won. We don't have to worry about that anymore. But of course, it was already insinuating its way into our halls of power and never stopped. Another person threatened by a police officer told the officer that they're Canadian citizens. In response, the police officer said, "You are Canadian citizens, you all are, but your relatives are Chinese citizens," the police replied, according to screenshots the Epoch Times reviewed. When the individual suggested they would cut ties with their relatives in China, with whom they've lost touch for more than a decade, the officer was unmoved. "It's too late," the officer wrote. Wow. So publishing pictures from an event nearly 40 years ago is enough for the Chinese to basically eradicate your family. Yeah, sounds about right. Sounds about right. Again, what other
What other ideology does this to people? What other ideology gives people the ability to act this way and then still believe they are the morally correct ones? It's so evil. The Chinese police think they can enforce rules beyond China's borders. The person, a U.S. citizen, told the Epoch Times they are arrogant enough to think that whatever the Communist Party says is the law anywhere, the source says. The targeted individuals have reported the intimidation tactics to the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security. The Canadian Security Intelligence Service is also aware of the matter. Across China, communist officials have stepped up measures to censor any mention of the massacre ahead of the anniversary, as they've done every year. Several activists told the Epoch Times that the security officers had followed dissidents to ensure they didn't do anything out of line. Some reported restrictions on their movement. Others described police ordering them not to circumvent the internet firewall or post comments online. Chinese military general Zhu Qingjian, in May 1989, paid the price for defying the Communist Party when he refused verbal orders to deploy troops against the demonstrators. For his defiance, he was stripped of command of the elite 38th Group of Army and jailed for 5 years. In a closed-door trial, he recalled telling the political commissar he'd rather lose the job than risk becoming a person condemned by history. Footage that emerged in late 2025 shows. Enes Kanter Freedom, a former NBA player who's championed China's human rights issues, says he was not surprised to hear about the Chinese regime's suppression over the release of the Tiananmen photos. The Chinese Communist Party will erase everything from history that is going to be used against them, he told Epoch Times. He recalled seeing his name pulled from the Boston Celtics roster on Chinese media portal Sohu after he highlighted China's persecuted groups on social media. Chinese internet giant Tencent, which had a 5-year NBA broadcasting deal, pulled live streams of all Celtics games, a sign of how big of a dictatorship Beijing is, Freedom said. It's very shameful, and it's one more reason there needs to be more voices from the West to expose their hypocrisy. Just once again, it's just another, you know, great reminder to value and cherish what we have in this country. Because, I mean, the Chinese might be particularly ruthless, particularly capable in this regard, but, you know, this mindset is really not unique the world over. Our mindset is the unique one. Our mindset, our willingness to condemn our own government when they do wrong, condemn our own people when they do wrong, that is not an attitude shared by just about anybody. And it really is one of those things that Americans have trouble comprehending. Like, they may recognize it intellectually, but really understanding what that means, like what that's like, what's going on in the minds of these people, it is really, truly foreign to us in every possible way. Yeah, maybe it's just white people, but Americans in particular. And this is a pretty common phenomenon that we're running into more and more these days. The Carmelo Anthony trial, sort of a great example, that it is truly shocking to see the number of people who are in support of a murderer. They have no reason to believe that he's anything but a murderer. They don't believe he's anything but a murderer. They're just in favor of the murderer because he's like them. Like the potential juror saying, I can't send another brother to jail. Really, because he walked up and stabbed a kid in the neck and killed him, murdered him in front of his brother. You don't care. That doesn't bother you. No sympathy, no empathy, no concern whatsoever for the victims. And that, I think, is the thing that we don't understand. That's the thing I don't understand. I can understand how you might do something like that, how you might participate in a cover-up if you think it's really necessary, but I would expect there to be a sense of guilt eating you from the inside as soon as you do it, and from that point on. There's no guilt, though. There's not like, I'm doing this even though it's, you know, maybe not right. I have a loyalty, and, you know, there's no like agony over this. There's no like, no, it's feels good. It feels good, and it feels right to these people. And I can't explain it. I can't understand it. And I don't want to be honest with you, but I do want to know my enemy. But I do want to understand what makes people that way so that we can prevent it. Because I do think it's a good thing. The way that we traditionally in America hold ourselves to a higher account, demand more of ourselves. And, you know, I guess you can go either way. I guess it's your preference. But to me, I'd rather live in a world where, you know, if somebody really does something egregious, like there's, you know, there's a difference, right? There's a difference between, you know, what some people have done, like the Antifa kid who basically turned his dad in for going to January 6th, sent his dad to jail for 10 years, even though he didn't do anything, even though he just wandered in. Like, that is maybe the most despicable act you can ever do. Like, loyalty to family is certainly extremely high in my book. But what do you do if your family member is a cold-blooded murderer? You know, how far does your loyalty extend? Again, I can understand, like, maybe your brother or your good friend gets in some trouble and maybe you got to help him get away with something. You know, I think loyalty can go pretty far. But, like, if I found out a family member of mine just stabbed an 18-year-old at a track meet and then ran away and lied about it, it's like, I'm not with you. I don't care how close we are. You're bad. You're bad and you're wrong and you're evil until you repent. I want nothing to do with you. Or if our country does something evil, I'm going to point it out. And I don't, but I, the reason I'm kind of like struggling about this and even like talking about this like this is because it is also clearly a major point of weakness that white people are this way, that Americans are this way. Clearly there is an advantage of having total loyalty to a group, and total group solidarity is obviously extremely effective. I just don't think it's moral. So I guess that's the struggle. It's like, well, it turns out, you know, being ruthless or overly loyal to your, you know, ethnic cohorts over and above all morality, turns out it's a pretty effective way to get what you want in this world. It just, a world of those types of people would be a miserable hell world of chaos. So I guess we'll keep trying to be moral while we can. There's also some video. I really can't tell if this is new footage or not. We can go to it on my screen. I don't think I've ever seen this, but then again, maybe I don't know if this is part of the new footage or not. I feel like I've seen at least portions of this before. Maybe more of it has been revealed than previously. But this, you know, these images really should strike fear into your heart. Should really let you know the danger of communism. And this view in particular, the low quality, the fact that it's just sort of this faceless mass, and then it zooms out and these people look almost just like herd of antelope running away from the lions, and then it goes back up and you just see these faceless black shapes moving towards them. Some of the stories I've heard, and you know, there's so much misinformation, and of course the censorship around Tiananmen Square, it really is hard to know what actually happened. I've heard the most gruesome stories you could possibly imagine about Tiananmen Square. The official report from the ambassador, the British ambassador to China, he sent back a report about what he saw during Tiananmen Square. It was also secret for a long time. And, you know, maybe it's propaganda. Maybe it's not really what happened. But he reports that tens of thousands of people were killed and that to clean up the bodies, they just ran them over with tanks until they were dismembered enough to wash down the drain with water. So Your value under communism, right? Yeah. It's just crazy. It's just crazy that we live in a world that just over and over and over again with absolute certainty, it's demonstrated that certain ideas are just awful and people just won't accept it. And we actually have to, I have to sit here and I have to actually argue against a sizable portion of our country that actually wants us to become communist. As if every single time it's been implemented, it hasn't been the biggest disaster the world has ever seen. The most egregious and horrifying abuses the world has ever seen has occurred in gulags and to this day in Chinese prisons. I mean, I'm sure you've seen some of the videos, the Chinese torture devices. I mean, a video slips out every once in a while and you'll see a Chinese guy literally strapped to a chair as other Chinese guys are like torturing him. Like every single time communism is tried, it results in the most horrific abuses ever. And yet we still have to sit here and argue about it. What the hell is wrong with everybody? It's enough to make you feel insane. I want to go to some other videos. Let's go to clip 10 here. This I heard on the way in, and it's, you know, I don't know how to feel about it because, you know, I'm raising my kids basically as screen-free as possible. We do like movie dinner night once a week, right? Or we'll, you know, on occasion show them something. But for the most part, screen-free. It makes being a parent significantly harder, I have to admit. Screens are practically magical. When you have a kid, truly, it is shocking. There have been times where our son used to wake up when he was like 2 years ago. He would wake up in the middle of the night and kind of be having these like night terror things. You just couldn't calm him down. And we would spend an hour doing everything we possibly could to try to calm him down. Any strategy that we could have. Do you want candy? Do you want food? Can we get you something? Can you do this? You need to stop right now. Nothing worked. And there's one particular time we spent literally an hour and our son was just wailing full volume the entire time. Finally, my wife goes, well, why don't we try to show him a video? I pull out my phone and it was literally like a straight hour of, and he just locked into the phone and just stared at it. And it was like, this is like magic. This is crazy. This feels like cheating. This is too easy. So I can understand how you can fall into the trap of just like, you give your kid a screen and they are gone. They're gone. They just sit there. They don't bother you. They don't complain. They aren't whining. They aren't crying. They just sit there. The problem is their brain is rotting through their nose. The problem is every minute they sit in front of that screen, their IQ drops a point. Their eyes unfocus. Their dopamine receptors, get fried. And you are literally destroying them. So on one hand, I'm like depressed at the fact that our kids are going to be growing up where everybody their age is going to be a zombified idiot. On the other hand, no competition. On the other hand, if you are raising your kid in traditional ways, not relying on screens, you're basically building superheroes compared to their fellows. So this is kind of depressing on one hand because of how horrible everybody is. But on the other hand, if you have a kid, just know that they're growing up with a bunch of mindless retards that they're going to have to compete against, which would be a good thing if you were selfish. I don't think it's a good thing. Let's go to clip 10 here.
So after about 20 years of teaching, the teachers and I have noticed that the kids keep getting more difficult every year. And by difficult, I don't mean like I don't like them and they don't like me. I just mean like they really lack the foundational skills that school requires, whether that be the foundational social skills, fine motor skills, gross motor skills. Gross motor skills meaning like they fall out of their chairs. They drop the Chromebooks every day. Thankfully, there's carpet in here. The boys want to touch each other nonstop. If I had a dollar for every time I said boys stop touching each other, and this is middle school, I would have thousands this year. Thousands. Not the girls, especially not this year. No girls holding hands or anything like in previous years. But the boys, they're dying for affection. Do you know at home tickling your kid or like patting their shoulder or like playing with their hair is all considered affection? Boys need more affection. Okay, The middle schoolers, so like the fifth graders going into sixth grade next year, 1,000 times harder than the sixth graders this year. The sixth graders this year, 1,000 times harder than the sixth graders last year. The dopamine centers in their brain are fried. They're addicted to devices. The Chromebooks are the devil. The cell phones are the devil. Roblox is the devil. It's all ruining the kids. And it's not about personal preference. Like, they cannot critically think. I don't have my students on Chromebooks, and I don't have them copying or doing notes. I make them use critical thinking every day, and they hate me. Today, they're making a poem called the Where I'm From poem, and they have to actually use their critical thinking. They have to think about their home. They have to think about adjectives that describe their home, and every day, they're burnt out on that. That's what this generation lacks. Nobody's making them think critically, and nobody's really holding them to standards that are very simple. Learn to care for yourself. Learn to understand like personal space and body language, you know? So I'm very concerned about this incoming group, and I will keep trying to do the tricks that I do, which come from raising an emotionally intelligent child and how to talk so little kids will listen. And I've even read books on ADHD and oppositional defiance, because that's where we're at now with most of the students. Now, the fraction of students who don't operate like that will be just fine. They were already going to be just fine because their parents communicate with them and their parents hold them to a certain standard. So, and literally just valuing education and creating a home environment that allows your child to focus on their education is the best thing you can do as a parent. And sometimes I know that's asking too much of parents, to create an environment that values education. I'm talking the bare minimum. I'm talking you make your kid go to school 4 days a week. I'm talking you make them clean out their backpack twice a month. I'm talking you check their grades 3 times a semester. I'm talking you know their teachers' names. I'm talking bare minimum. I'm talking there is a book in your kid's room that they read. Bare minimum. That's what we need now. Off the Chromebooks as well. Off the phones.
So any society that allows this to happen to their kids is an illegitimate society. And this didn't just happen to our kids. This was deliberately done to our kids. Schools would not get funding if they did not accept the Google Chromebooks that are programming them to be lifelong consumers addicted to these products. This was your government doing this to you. So, again, you know, I don't know what I can say to people, but it's like, this is your kid. This is their life. You're making them weak and stupid. What is wrong with you? Do I have to convince you to do this? It's like, I don't know, man. It's a little bit hopeless. I have to admit, it's a little bit hopeless. I'll try to refill on hope and have more to deliver to you tomorrow. Go to thealexjonesstore.com to support us. We'll see you then.
Folks, I'm Dr. Bigley. Today's presentation will be about methylene blue and you.
Dr. Bigley, what does methylene blue do?
Great question, Billy. It has to do with your mitochondria, the powerhouse of your cells. Let's bring out the mitochondria now!
Right.
As I was saying, methylene blue supercharges your mitochondria, which does wonders for your mental clarity, stamina, and overall pep. Just look at him go!
Gee, Dr. Bigley, he must have drank a lot of methylene blue. He was bouncing off the walls.
Right you are, Billy. He sure drank a lot. Let's continue, shall we?
Billy, did you know that methylene blue can cure communism?
No, sir. Can I see?
Why, certainly, Billy. Take a look over there.
Behold, Ivan, a Ruski doggedly determined to undermine our way of life. Careful, Billy. He bites. Oh. Look. Vodka. Potato hooch. Watch. The communism is slowly leaving his body.
Wow. The methylene blue cured the red right out of him.
So, how do you feel?
Gee, Doc, I don't know what got into me.
I feel like $1 million now. Say, where can I get some more of that blue stuff in case I become retarded again?
You can find it on the alexjonesstore.com.
What does .com mean?
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.